Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
What's up, dorks? Welcome back to the Bad Christian Podcast. I imagine y'all had a good Sunday, went to church, feeling spiritually uplifted and all that, and then right back in the gutter with us on Monday. I love it. I guess that's dualistic of you, and that's what we're going to talk about today. Dualism itself, meaning is there a soul? We have that, but so what's the difference in the mind and the body? That gets confusing. The more you think about it, the more you talk about it. And today's show is sponsored by ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter is the highest rated hiring site in America. And you can try it for free by visiting ZipRecruiter.com/badchristian. Let's do it.
Oh, hell yeah, God showed up.
I don't give a shit what I put in my body.
You don't ever talk to me that way. So if you've never done oral, then you're extra virgin.
No, girl, it's my flesh.
I showed my dad my penis when I was 25 years old. You don't get more honest than that.
3, 2, 1, oh! Bad Christian Podcast. It's the best, and everyone knows it. Everyone on earth knows we're the best. Bad Christian.
All right.
Wow. Whoa.
So seriously, would you call yourself drunk right now? And do you guys do you guys drink to feel a buzz? Like, is this something that you guys do to be able to get through
put
the
me
podcasting
on the spot like that?
Oh God,
I'm on my third Corona.
I know, but Toby says stuff like, I got to get through this.
Fucking wasted. I can't live without the alcohol. You know what's really funny is
you said you had an eating problem just a second ago, too. Do you want to come clean with that? Is that the truth?
Well, if there's an open bag of candy or something like that, it has to be all gone or I have to move it away from me. So, I mean, that is the truth. Like, you know what I mean? Like, if I'm anywhere and there's half a candy bar left, it ain't going to be a half a candy bar left. I can't let that happen.
Are you guys aware?
I can't stop.
It's like cleaning your plate.
I can't stop. Like, I'm full. Like, I don't.
Yeah, but you can because you've done stuff like keto. You've turned down sweets.
Yes. So no, but that's a structured system.
See, I'm all or nothing.
Well, keto also.
This is not good.
So,
but not if you're on a structured system. Like, if you're on the keto.
I'm saying I'm just like you. Like, I'm not good with moderation.
No, I don't know about that. So, I do have a. Have you heard the theory that addicts, people that are addicts, are actually just either more mentally or motorized, keyed up, or even more evolved than regular people, and that they thrive in crisis and are like, you know, like airplane pilots, and they can just, you know, they have a bit more. There's some people that think this, and I'm not citing anything here, but it's like they have a higher drive for things, an appetite for stuff, and especially if they're abused or something bad happens to them or they have no hope, then of course that's just going to go toward addiction. Otherwise, it usually goes toward achievement. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of pretty top performers that
are
very driven by chemicals or functional. People call them sometimes functional alcoholics, you know, stuff like that. So sometimes I think that is I think Toby's almost more in that kind of
a
category.
Functional alcoholic.
No, I just mean, you know, like.
What does it mean if you think definitely no matter what?
A higher level of intensity is easier to fall in the ditch of alcoholism.
Sure.
If you also have some things go bad and you also need to escape, but you're more keyed up. You know, whatever.
Well, what do you think about the mentality that no matter what, in any situation, alcohol makes it better? Like, in any situation, alcohol can make it better. Now, I don't really believe that. You know what's really funny is
we're
drinking beer, but it's because I'm hanging out with you guys, and I really have cut back on my drinking. I wasn't even drinking.
I feel like y'all don't realize it. I really do believe this is peer pressure. Like everybody else is
drinking. Joey's not drinking. You're the one always saying we got to go get some beer. And you said, I'm not drinking this weekend. No, I think I have to.
Wait, hold on. I'm pressuring y'all. Yeah, shit.
And you're pressuring yourself. Well, I guess I got to. I'm podcasting.
That's one of the signs of addiction. Peer pressuring you. You literally forced Joey to drink a Coors Light yesterday.
Yeah, I wouldn't let him stop pushing it at me.
You could have not drank, and
I
made
you. He said no. Yeah. He said no. Then he said no a few more times.
And then when I realized it was cold, I was like, ugh.
I knew if I kept going,
I'm telling you, that beer tasted so good.
It was so damn good.
But seriously, I have a real problem. Like, I'm good at all or nothing sort of deals. Like, I can... And Priscilla gets frustrated with the fad diets. I think she's a little more open now to keto, but she... And the reason being is when she was in high school and early college, she had like some eating problems
right.
as far as like body image, eating disorder. So
does she not believe the gospel?
Well
what the hell?
For her, she sees it as
why didn't she go to the Bible?
It's pretty obvious.
I'm not following y'all's joke. What did y'all say?
Why
should she believe the Christian word of the
joke? The Christian joke is
oh, gotcha.
She can find all her. Why would she do that?
Gotcha.
Did she know she's?
Then nobody told her that. Bible?
I told her to snap out of that body.
She's God's daughter?
And right.
She's a child of the beloved.
People
I've
do
told
that.
Her that.
People really just had eating disorder. People yeah. tell have told her God can get you through this.
She wasn't
you
a Christian.
Just gotta turn to God and all that stuff.
She didn't always
bear it. As if it was dangerous to like you might have a real problem. We need to think about this in a real way. Counselor. Anyway, sorry to derail it, but
no, I was just gonna say that I would be embarrassed to give you a narrative of how my mind can function in the morning, for example, when
please
I'm...
Please do the embarrassing
when
thing.
When,
yeah,
when I'm like,
just please do that.
When I'm like on that line of, okay, I need to start eating better, but then it's just like the kids are like, oh, let's go get a donut or something
right.
like that. And I'm like, oh, I want a Krispy Kreme donut too. So right. I eat that and I'm like, well, screw it.
The now, whole day's
now,
ruined.
Now I got to get... but I'll be like, I got to get everything in me because tomorrow... I'm starting all over, and it's sick.
I know.
I mean, it is. It yeah. it can be.
You might have
sick.
A sugar addiction. I'll give you that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and I've the first times I've had carbs in a couple of weeks have been on this trip, and I'm very proud of myself that I stopped with the M&Ms after a few handfuls.
Well, I also think there's a thing that goes on. That, I mean, there's a willpower is a thing too.
There is. So, there is, and that's so part
I,
that I've had.
I don't
but there's
believe...
something that Joey and I have that you don't. Like you get full.
I have it worse.
Okay,
than
but
you.
let's separate. Let's separate.
I eat way more. Than
we
you,
can
I
separate
think.
Food from the other things. You would have to agree.
We went to an ice cream place together, and I got two helpings of ice creams. You got one.
So they use in addiction stuff like that. They and this is pretty damning if you think about it, but they would say stuff like if you could describe your relationship with alcohol or weed or even food, if that relationship that you have with that is like something that you could describe and talk about, that's is in itself a problem. Now, I would suggest that Joey doesn't obviously have a lick of momentum with alcohol. Or drugs. He just, whatever.
Right.
Like, you see him drink yes. a beer, and then he doesn't drink a beer.
Yeah, that's totally true.
You and I oh have a momentum and a relationship with alcohol. Like,
right.
you know what you're... I mean, think about, you could talk about a hangover this, and I like to right. drink this, but I don't... Like, you know, you have this rich
yeah.
involvement with this substance.
Yeah.
That's something to think. That's... You have a relationship with alcohol, which is a... That's something.
That's true.
Now, you may feel that way with food. You certainly don't with alcohol, though. It's just clearly you're not... an alcoholic or have any addiction.
Joey would only drink too much on accident and yeah. I would definitely drink too much intentionally.
I drink too much if I don't not on purpose.
Right.
That
yes.
that's different.
Yeah. I mean, some people say that's really bad what we just said.
I know.
But now here's what's been interesting to me is I have thought lately, maybe it's just getting older or whatever, I do feel better. I sleep better if I don't drink almost at all.
Yeah.
Like even now I'm having a few beers and I'm thinking, man, I probably won't sleep as good. I don't know. I'm thinking the calories, the empty calories of it. What is my real reason to drink? Like, there's a lot of negatives to it. There really yeah. is. Now, I do enjoy the taste, and the most thing I like about it, I hate hangovers. I'm not trying to drink too much, but I can drink. I can drink a shitload. I just can.
No
it's maybe
doubt.
So I'm a big dude or whatever. But the real thing about alcohol, this the most enticing thing about it is, it sets the atmosphere. Like, I feel more relaxed now with an ice cold Corona in my hand. Yeah, I just do. Like, I feel like, oh, I'm relaxed. I'm having more fun on the podcast. I'm hanging out with my friends. All this.
That's, and how about this? This is really cool, actually. That just happened. That you said specifically Corona, and so. Have you ever been watching a movie and then, like, you're not like, I'm not going to drink or whatever. You see somebody pour a cocktail or drink a Corona, and you're like, oh my gosh.
That looks so good.
Well, this is kind of exciting to me. I bet for all the people that are similar to you and I bet you just did that for them. They're just saying, oh, it's just so great. I'm sitting here with the Corona.
Just do it. Yep.
Whoever you are that when Toby said that just now, you also need to watch out.
Yeah, you're in trouble.
If you were a person when Toby said Corona, you started thinking, do I have a Corona? Can I go get a Corona? Where am I going to get a Corona? If that was you, then you're like me. And you may probably need to watch out. But for Joe, people like Joey, it's like, yeah, he said he had a Corona. What does that mean? When you hear somebody say Corona, you go, get me one.
Like, I have to mentally overcome this thing in my mind that says my life is incomplete without sugar and carbs. Like, I seriously, in my mind, because I feel like I'm at a point in my life to where, and I think I've said this recently before, so like, okay, I'm 40. The decisions I'm making now, it's going to dictate how long I live. Right. So I truly see sugar as something that I figure out now or it will cost me, whether it's a shorter life or an unhealthier life as I'm living.
Right.
I have to limit my sugar intake. I have to.
Well, you know what? I actually have been telling myself in a way, I don't like this totally because I do like a little bit of freedom and I don't want to enforce this, especially I'm thinking about my kids. I've been thinking about sugar as a poison. Like it's a real thing that like gets me and I'm in trouble around it and I can't, I'm not myself or in control necessarily around sugar.
Yikes.
Like, because it tastes so good and it gets me and I love it. And Just like we're talking about alcohol and stuff like that, I get a rush from just a little bit of sugar. I get a little bit of energy.
Here's an interesting question. The amount of energy that Christians put into abstaining from porn, wouldn't they be better off just abstaining from sugar
probably
instead?
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. I mean, you know, but again, a lot of people can handle a lot of stuff in different ways, so I don't really know. Now, I'll tell you something that is important. If you have a job, if you work at a job, if you want employees, you got to find the best ones, and let me tell you how to do it. Of course, it's ZipRecruiter. It is very challenging. It's not just that it's challenging. It's just there's really nothing more important to the life of an organization than the minds of the people that inhabit that and run that organization. If that's your business, you are no better than your talent and your employees. And I don't care what your business is, that is going to be true. ZipRecruiter can find qualified candidates and then ZipRecruiter.com. I'm gonna go ahead and say it this way. ZipRecruiter.com/badchristian is where I'm going to eventually point you here. But ZipRecruiter sends you over 100 of the web's leading job boards. They don't just stop there, though, because they have a powerful matching technology, and ZipRecruiter scans through thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invite them to apply for your job. And again, there's nothing more important than that. And as the applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one of them, and they'll spotlight the top candidates. Now, think about the mental energy it would take for you to do that, scan thousands of resumes and not miss anything, and highlight the best candidates and circle back. Not only would it take a lot of hours, but I would assure you, you don't have the mental focus to not miss things or get that wrong. ZipRecruiter will help you. It's so effective that 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. That means sign up today and then maybe later today hire somebody or get an interview at least. So with results like that, it's no wonder that ZipRecruiter is the highest rated hiring site in America. And right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address. That's ZipRecruiter.com/badchristian. That's ZipRecruiter.com/badchristian. One more time. ZipRecruiter.com/badchristian. ZipRecruiter is the smartest way to hire. All right. Guys, it's that time again.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're going to do like a call for Jesus?
Nope. That's not it.
Toby and I are going to hash out some of our conflicts.
Oh,
no,
God.
No, we're going to do a science segment today, guys.
All right.
Where's Jesus and all in our podcast anymore, Joy? We used to have Jesus in everything. Now this motherfucker.
Do you know we've prayed on this podcast before?
We used to, yeah.
We've prayed for people.
We have. And now we're doing this shit.
We're calling Christians stupid.
Evolution. And now it's time for Science Lessons for Christians. Because when it comes to science, Christians are stupid.
Okie dokie. This is not going to be a heavy one like some of the other ones I've doing. No, I'm sorry. It's going to be much heavier, but less information.
Okay.
It'll be easier.
So this is going to weigh heavier on our hearts.
Well, Joey.
But less words.
Joey asked, he gave a bunch of, ideas of what he thought would be cool for a science segment. And he asked a question that's kind of outside of science, but interesting enough.
Yeah.
That I thought it'd be worth exploring in a way. And Joey wants to know, is there a soul?
Ooh.
I want to know what you think about that.
Right.
Wow. I already have my belief system, partner.
Okay. That's a good question.
Well, and I think where this came from, too, is I was watching a documentary on Jeffrey Dahmer, and I watched the movie that came out, My Friend Jeffrey, that's a depiction of his childhood.
Yeah,
and I am just so intrigued by Jeffrey Dahmer. Isn't that
crazy?
Tell
me more about what's intrigued about
it. So what had me really interested was I'm just assuming that the narrators on the documentary were coming from a secularist viewpoint. My assumption is based on the fact that they were going into how his brain was working, why it operated this way, the fact that when he was super lonely and in such a vulnerable place in his life, he was cutting up animals, and so that brought like a comfort. He was also entering puberty, and so there was a sexual deal. So they're explaining scientifically why he became who he is and his killing spree, but then in the same breath, they call it pure evil. And so I was really thinking about if Jeffrey Dahmer is a product of his cells and his brains and his neurons firing, and also how his brain responded to his upbringing and childhood, I don't understand how that is pure evil. And so that's where it made me think, as Christians, don't we believe in something maybe mysterious, but in addition to the brain, that gives us the ability to make decisions? I know, Toby, I think both of you guys lean a little further away from freedom, free will. But if free will exists, it seems like a separate component from the brain. The brain is the natural thing, but this free will is some other gift that God gave us. Otherwise, it really does seem like, well, we're not at fault if everything we do is a result of our brain. So is Jeffrey Dahmer pure evil?
Well, what do you think?
Yeah, what'd you come away? Like it sounds like you felt bad for him.
Yes, I did.
Like do you almost look, the way you're describing it is almost like, man, his body and stuff acted against him.
Yeah,
or
and his experiences.
And I don't know if that partly has to do with me experiencing depression, but I think it was more how they were describing it. I mean, they were going into scientifically why he became the eating human killer.
All right.
And even after the first time he did it, I remember Ted Bundy saying the same sort of thing. After the first time, he was like, please tell me that was a nightmare. Please tell me that did not happen. Like, it was like denial. There's no way I did that. And then after he did it the second time, he was like, F it. I'm not going to try to stop myself anymore. This is,
Think about that impulse about what, in the same context of what you and I were talking about a minute ago. I got it. I already ate a donut, so I'm also going to go eat
another donut or liver
and all this stuff.
I mean, like
that, it's just that thing. Now, the thing that really is crazy about this is think about young Jeffrey Dahmer alone, like you said, all this stuff. And where did the idea to kill an animal?
He was intrigued ever since he was a child.
Right. But that's
what I'm saying. He carried around a plastic bag in his pocket to pick up roadkill when he saw it.
I know. So it fascinated him. And then it became this one thing. And then it became sexual. And then he's like, well, all this was felt good or something. And so it just gets worse and worse and worse. But worse for everybody else. You know what I mean?
Like, yes. But here's what's interesting is it seems like the crux of our Christian faith and maybe the opposite of evil is love and really putting other people first. There was not this vindictive approach of I'm going to cause harm to other people and do evil to other people as much as it was this. I'm crazy, I'm sadistic, and I'm acting on these impulses.
Right.
And he felt, I mean, call me crazy, but in interviews with Jeffrey Dahmer, I really sensed true remorse from the grief that he caused family members.
So it sounds like you don't think he was almost very evil at all, just maybe a little evil. Like
I think maybe there's evil behind it. Like if there's a spiritual entity that's evil, it caused that.
To destroy his life.
I think maybe humanity is tainted with evil, but I don't necessarily see the stuff that he did as a result of him being an evil person. As much, I mean, I would put it in the same way of when I lose my cool with Priscilla. Yeah, that's evil, but sometimes it's just it's a product of everything going on in your head when you snap or when you snap.
Okay, let me put it in this context too, to just to kind of talk about your imagine Jeffrey Dahmer. He steals a kid, right? He takes it to his house. He lets the kid.
I don't think he did anything with the kid.
No.
14 years old.
Oh, he did.
Oh, yeah. But I'm not any killer or whatever. Right? Imagine they steal a kid, take them to their house, allow them to get older and all this stuff, and then kills them and eats them, right? That sounds horrific, right?
Yeah.
Now, that kid is a cow. And you go, oh, that's not a big deal.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That kid was
right
a pig.
Back at soul.
It's not a human, it's a pig. And now you're talking about he did this, like we do that to animals and it's natural and okay. And then he goes, he does it to a human and then it's sadistic and evil. But
is that because humans have souls?
You might be right.
And that's what we're going to talk about.
You might be right.
Now, y'all just burnt through the first 8 out of the 10 minutes of my science segment. So we'll restart it.
Astrophysics. Woo! Chemistry. Cellular biology. Mathematics.
All right, I'll cut that short. That was funny. Okay. So this is going to be pretty not very information dense, but that's okay. We'll keep it light.
The soul.
Okay, so just I want everybody to think about it. This is not that I'm not going to answer the question whether it's not their soul, but I do want people to think about the soul, and we'll talk about the brain specifically in some ways with some story and narrative examples instead of information dump. Sound good?
Like, is love the result of your brain?
Okay, think about the soul. If you have a soul, it contains the real essence of who you are, right?
Yeah.
And it's what you're like.
Yeah,
like Joey's soul has to contain what Joey is like, or else
Joey's soul
point?
Has to contain what. Yes, yep.
The qualia, the qualities,
right,
of Joey must be in his soul.
Yeah, especially if,
or
if
else,
you think about
what would it matter to have one
or to go to heaven with right. that? Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, keep that in mind because you do believe that, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Now I'm going to run through some stories of people with brain injuries,
and for our listeners' sake.
Man.
For our listeners' sake, it is as simple as when you see an open casket, there's something different about that person than everybody else in the room, and it's because they don't have a soul in that body.
Okay, well, if you have a soul, it certainly contains your essence and what you are like.
Yeah.
Keep that in mind as you listen to the following stories.
Oh, God.
All right. In August of 1989, 35-year-old...
19 what?
89. 35-year-old John Sarkin suffered a stroke, underwent surgery that removed part of his brain. After the surgery, Sarkin had the inexplicable urge to draw, something he had no interest in before. He became a prolific artist, and his work has been shown around the world.
Good Lord.
What did that have to do with... Was it artist? Was artist in his soul? Was it only after part of his brain was removed? Is it, you know? All right. In 2002, Jason Padgett was assaulted by two men and left with a severe concussion. Remarkably, the attack also turned Padgett into a mathematical genius and gave him the ability to visualize geometric shapes and angles. He's just one of the few people in the world who it's happened to, called acquired savant syndrome.
Oh my God.
Was he brilliant before?
Doesn't sound
is
like
he
it.
After? Is he in his soul in heaven? Can he?
I'm developing geometric an answer abilities? Right now, but I'll let you keep going.
In 94, 42-year-old orthopedic surgeon Tony Cesoria was talking to his mother on a payphone when he was struck by lightning. A few weeks after that, he developed a penchant for piano music and began teaching himself to play. Prior to that, he was indifferent to music, but now spends his days composing and continues to work professionally as a surgeon and a pianist.
Good Lord.
Ever since he suffered a stroke in 2004, Malcolm Myatt has been unable to feel sadness.
What website is this, by the way?
Oh, God.
Ranker.com. So they're ranking the highest instances of good stories. So, well, it's you can look them up. I'm telling you.
Tell the story again.
Malcolm Myatt, since he suffered a stroke in 2004, has been unable to feel sadness. The stroke affected his frontal lobe, which is the region of the brain that regulates emotions, and he sees being happy all the time as an advantage.
Wow.
I would like that.
Okay.
Well, maybe not.
I know. I don't know.
And these are the fun. There's a bunch of more of these. But after recovering from a serious car crash in 2005, Leanne Rowe was left with a newly acquired French-sounding accent.
That's insane.
Struggling to accept a new voice, she became reclusive and has her daughter speak for her because she's embarrassed about it. It's a rare condition known as foreign accent syndrome.
All right, so here's the thing. It seems like this is...
I'll just do one more. This one's one of the most famous ones. In 1848, Phineas Gage, a lot of people know who he it's one of the more famous ones. He was working on a railroad in Vermont. An explosion caused an iron rod to shoot straight through his head. He survived the accident and became one of neurology's most famous cases of brain injury. The true extent remains unknown, but the effects of rod have been so profound that everybody that knows him or all his closest friends say that is not. It's just no longer Gage. It's just somebody else, period.
It's a completely different person.
Yeah, nobody that knew him before, they're just like, well, this is just somebody else.
Wow.
It is another person.
It's a stranger in the same body.
Right. It's just a different person that looks exactly like Toby. It's like, well, Toby was this way, Toby's this way, Toby's this way. This is somebody I don't know. Now, what about the soul? What are you going to do about that?
Well, none of these examples have anything to do, and I agree with what this proves, but I guess what I'm looking for is, what is it inside of us that decides I'm going to do evil towards someone? Is that a random result of how our brain works and our upbringing, or is that us making a decision to do evil? Because it seems like maybe there are instances where we do decide to do
evil.
And that's what I'm saying is, so I guess that leaves me to have to believe in like an additional component of our human existence besides the brain. Like there's the brain, and then there's some gift that we've been given to be able to make decisions. Or a guy could be like, are they crazy? It's all in the brain. Are you kidding me? And that's just how he made it. I'd be totally fine if we are our brains. Mm-hmm. Be totally fine with that.
It's
I would believe God made it that way.
On anything anywhere close to evidence that there is anything beyond our brains.
What's crazy is a lot of Christians believe in soul, spirit, and body. Not just soul and
body. Dualism is the classic thing, is the mind different than the body. Mind, body, that's been around across religions and stuff like that. But, I mean, it depends on what you consider evil. Do some people think that being, BDSM dominatrix is evil? Well, Canadian woman became evil and a dominatrix after a car accident. And then some of these are hilarious. A straight rugby player becomes a gay hairdresser after a brain injury. There's a bunch of the ones where people turn into... This is true. Have you heard the ones I've heard on Radio Lab and plenty of other places? There's been people who become pedophiles after a brain injury.
Oh,
God, man.
Is he not pure? What did you not say? That's evil to be a pedophile? But it was no evidence of it. There's people.
Pedophilia is an evil act.
I agree.
For sure, but people are sick.
Right. Well, this guy had a brain tumor, and he had never had any of these impulses.
And I'm not even saying they shouldn't
ever.
Go
and then
to
he
jail.
Admitted it. It's like, look, I don't know what I'm supposed to do now, but I'm completely driven for this. Yeah. And he was, after, cause, and That'd then they found he had a brain tumor.
I think
the guy that shot in the clock tower, said, you got to do an autopsy. I know there's something wrong with me. And he's killing people.
Yeah. I guess what it boils down to.
Are they evil in their soul?
I guess what it boils down to is when I'm watching this Dahmer documentary, I'm thinking, am I not this close for that being me instead? Like if I was born in a different family with different experiences
Exactly.
Well, okay. Here's my experience. Seriously. Like there's a real time in my life where I didn't have confidence. I wasn't confident in myself. And then I got an Indochino suit and it changed everything about my life. Like, I'm telling you.
Changed your brain structure?
I think it did. I don't want to go on record. I don't know. I'd love to have some brain scans of pre-Indochino for me because it has been amazing. And one of the coolest things about it, if you go online, look up, you can type in BC Con. There's pictures on the internet, I'm sure. We all wore our Indochino suits at the BC Con. And somebody actually came up and said, is this an Indochino commercial? And I didn't even think about it before that moment because I was like, oh, I'm wearing the best suit I possibly can. So that's why I'm wearing this suit. I'm not wearing it for, even though I love the Indochino name and the brand and stuff, I'm wearing Indochino suits because it's the best suit I've ever owned in my life. And I look the best in it. And that, and the reason why is because it's custom. I mean, you can't, I mean, what's better? Let me give you a couple options. You can go buy a suit off the rack, which I've done and was horrible, or you can go buy other custom made suits. And how much money are you going to spend? I mean, Indochino is so affordable. Indochino is the world's largest made to measure menswear company, and it has been featured in major publications like GQ, Forbes, Fast Company. I mean, they're a real company making a great product. They make suits and shirts made to your exact measurements, and here's how it works. Visit the showroom or shop online at Indochino.com. Pick your fabric, choose your customizations, submit your measurements. They make measuring for your suit so easy and kind of fun. I mean, Jess and I did it together, and it was great. I actually really thought it was fun and neat. I like the whole process of how I was able to get a customized suit just for me. And then all you got to do is just wait for your custom suit to arrive in just a few weeks. So here's what you got to do, folks. If you want the best suit of your life, do this. This week, our listeners can get any premium Indochino suit for just $379. You're not going to find that anywhere else, I believe, on earth. I mean, that's just unbelievable for this quality of suit. At Indochino.com, when you enter Bad Christian at checkout. Seriously, that's 50% off the regular price for a made-to-measure premium suit. Plus, shipping's free. So that's Indochino.com, promo code BADCHRISTIAN for any premium suit for just $379 and free shipping. Incredible deal for a suit that will fit you better than anything off the rack ever would.
Very good.
Now, okay. Can I talk about the brain for a second?
You can. Let me conclude that was the end of the science segment, and that was very good. And Joey, good idea on that. Although, like I said, what the information is. Let me tell you one that... Can I make fun of Joey also, though?
Oh, please. I'd love it. I would love it.
With permission. Joey taught middle school science, right?
Yeah.
Let me tell you another science topic that sent me. He sent 12 ideas for science.
Are you going to give me a chance to explain?
I will, but this one's really funny. One of them was, you know, the soul thing. I thought that would be good.
Yeah, that's a good one.
There's some good ones in here. But the middle school science teacher also asked me to cover something he might be interested in. Are atoms alive? And if not, if living things are made of atoms, why aren't the things made out of them living?
If unliving things are made of living atoms, why aren't they considered living?
Right.
Yeah.
So are atoms alive, he asks.
That's very interesting.
They just seem to be alive. They're moving around in there. Those electrons
are doing stuff. Yeah,
the middle school science teacher says, if you're moving, it must be something moving must be alive.
I'm asking. I didn't say definitely. And and for the record, I had no business teaching science.
So wait, we won't cover that one. That would be a short one. No. Okay. No, it actually would be a good segment to try to cover.
I like that one too.
What constitutes is something living, actually.
That's a great one. I didn't get to say my point about the brain.
And I want to know whether we're going to talk about Dahmer's evil.
Yeah, no, we're going to talk about souls and consciousness and whatever else. Rest.
Great, 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 great. So here's what I will say. Yeah, that's a tough one. Like when you bring up that, like there is part of me that goes, the reason he's evil is because that's how we perceive it, right? So now it is evil because somebody died. He did something really horrible to other people. That's evil because we say murdering people and eating them
things
is
that
evil.
We labeled evil occurred.
Right, right.
There's no doubt about that.
But he was acting on this impulse that said, "You in his brain, you got to do this. You got to do it. You have to." Same. That's what I was saying. That's what I was relating to. If there's an open bag of
who was in charge there?
If there's an open bag of peanut M&Ms, I go, "Oh, you got to eat them. They're right there. It's going to taste so good. You got to." And then I reach in, I grab a couple more, mm-hmm. and then a few minutes later, I reach in and grab a couple more until eventually I go, "No." So I mean, that's when he probably.
But you agree, you could have not eaten M&Ms, but it wouldn't be reasonable to say I could in no way ever like it wouldn't be reasonable to say I could live my whole life without ever indulging a craving.
Yeah,
you couldn't say that about yourself. But
that's
you
true.
Could say I could have in that
that's
moment.
That's a good point.
Not
that's a good
M&M.
Point. Like for example, you did not eat one peanut M&M, but you will at some point in your life. So
I will indulge a craving at some point. I can avoid it at any given.
And so
moment.
My craving sounds funny, peanut M&Ms. His sounds horrific and the most sadistic thing mm-hmm. you could possibly do. Now,
did you create that craving? Who created it? Where did it come from?
There has to be some responsibility.
No, seriously,
I'm being serious.
You had a craving that you noticed that had arisen. Correct.
I blame my parents. Where's the origin of myself? I think my parents always thought, you know, I was always the fat kid and all stuff, and they always, you got to eat victory plate, finish your meal, make sure it's empty.
I mean, I told you, my mom used to call my grandma on the phone when we're leaving McDonald's and say, "You'll never guess what Joey ate."
I know.
So I'm sitting back there in the back seat just gloating.
It's amazing.
Like, this is great.
I know.
Like, my mom's proud. My mom's proud. He ate a Big Mac. He ate 6 chicken nuggets and a McRib.
I've never seen him pack so much food.
I'm so happy.
I mean, okay, but I'm saying when you had the urge to eat, you simply noticed that urge to eat the M&Ms. You didn't author it.
No.
You noticed that you had the urge to eat the M&Ms.
I will say in this instance, I authored it because I asked Reva to go buy peanut M&Ms. Right. So I did actually author it and everything, but
We're almost approaching consciousness, though, which is maybe related to the soul. But I'm saying, do you not notice that you're having thoughts and urges?
More the way I look at it, it's a weakness, right? Like, I almost can't stop myself from sugar. It's that powerful of a thing. Same way as...
Can you make yourself want kale?
That's a good one.
Why not? If you're the author of the M&M desire, why can't you decide to desire kale?
There's nothing enjoyable about it, and sugar is so sweet. I mean, it's like, that's what I'm saying. Like, I actually believe.
So you're not the author of that
desire. Maybe what we're talking about, when we're talking about Satan and evil, that's that thing of like, it's so sweet, it's so seductive, it's so good. I can't resist it because I just like it so much.
But
kale, no problem.
But think of the origin of the desire. Did you author it? Did you cause? And if so, why can't you cause other desires?
My body responds to like wanting that sweet. So my body goes, oh, you need it.
What do you mean by your body?
I think my taste buds, everything about me, like I've trained my body probably from very early on, whenever I first got a piece of sugar or candy or cake, mm-hmm. I went, oh, this is so good.
Conditioning.
Can I have more? Yeah. Like my kids right now, so your body authored
the desire for the M&M.
My body.
Is that not you?
My body goes, ooh, this is awesome.
What's the difference in you and your body?
Nothing. Maybe. I mean, my brain is my body the mm-hmm. same way. So I don't know if there's a difference.
I'm pointing at, are you really the author of your thoughts, or do you just simply notice and grab hold to some of them?
I believe something fired in me, like Pavlov's response of my mouth starts watering because I've been trained to know when M&Ms are around, this is what happens. It tastes good, the chocolate, the peanut, this, and this.
Your conscious mind was not the author of the impulse.
It has to be, though.
Why does it have to be?
What else would it be? What are you saying? It's just firing on its own and I'm not a part of it?
What about something like that? What about an alcoholic?
That's what I'm saying.
What about an alcoholic? Like when I think of
I know you're trying to hold on to the notion of responsibility. That's clear. But if you just take a second and think about it, where do your thoughts come from?
At a certain
point,
going with Joey's idea, talking about alcohol, I mean, at a certain point, you have to have it. Like, if you're a heroin addict, responsibility or agency exists.
I'm not really denying that. I'm just saying you're saying you decided to desire M&Ms?
No.
Found yourself to desire M&Ms.
Well, here's what
if you could.
See if this makes sense. Tell me what I'm thinking here. This is what really freaks me out. I have a thought in my head or a desire or something's firing in my brain that goes, you must have M&Ms.
Was that your decision to make that firing?
It doesn't end there. The next thought or this other thing, what's the other thing that goes, don't do it? There's that too. In my head,
which one is you?
I don't know. That's what I'm saying. Which one is? Are they both me?
Is either one of them your soul?
Is there a duality? Maybe that soul thing? But there was a real thing where Toby, dude, don't get another handful of M&Ms.
But part of it, there's not a simple solution. There's not a simple solution. But part of it has to be.
Who are they?
Well, I'm saying, even if you did not create either of those thoughts, you simply noticed both.
So I'm the noticer.
Yes, that's right. That's what I'm suggesting. You're the guy that notices those things and then decides what to do.
I mean, don't you think, the first time he ever had a peanut M&M, he basically clued himself in. I like these a lot. And so next time he saw peanut M&Ms, he was like, man, I forgot how good these were. As a little kid, however old he was, he was teaching his brain to react that way. So what came first? Because now his brain... I do believe it is a physiological process. He may be convinced that he just doesn't have willpower.
How did you teach yourself to be sexually attracted to women with big boobs? How did you teach that to yourself?
Well, when I was five, I used to go up to women and
just... super confused about where is this coming from?
You heard of the game Tune In Tokyo?
No.
Okay. Well,
how did you teach yourself to be wildly attracted to women with big boobs?
I didn't.
Okay. I fully believe.
You just noticed that you were.
I don't think it's that. I think older men in my life started giving clues of this is what's hot.
And if you grew up in the jungle, you would have never had attraction to human female women.
Maybe not. How about this? Maybe not in the same way.
Now here's a. How about this though? My first sexual stuff. It was not me.
Was it confusing and surprising, and you didn't know what it was or why you thought
it? It wasn't me. All of a sudden, I had a boner, and I was like, "Oh, or
did you?
I had to do something."
There's no decisions you made.
Right. Like
you just
had to
try. All the only decision you made is I'm going to try to stop from grabbing some woman's boobs.
But that's an animal. That's an animal instinct, and you think an animal is an animal. If an animal goes and if a dog goes and attacks a cat,
right.
You go, that's the dog. Right. You don't think it's not the dog. You're saying I'm not the toad.
No, I'm just saying you're an animal.
Oh, well, yeah. It's an animal instinct. But it's instinctual. And now we're at another level where I go, oh, my instinct is to get more M&Ms.
The consciousness is what I'm suggesting is just the part of you that is noticing the animal instinct.
Well, let's go another angle here.
It's not the author of the impulses.
Let's go another angle here. I have an easier time, even though I know this is a hypocritical notion, I have an easier time identifying Dylan Roof as evil. Because to me, there just seems to be something like, I hate black people, and I'm going to shoot 9 people that I'm actually plotting against and all that stuff. But Jeffrey Dahmer had to plan his stuff too. But for some reason, I put Jeffrey Dahmer in. I mean, obviously, that's sick. So once you do that with Jeffrey Dahmer, though, there's no stopping you from saying, well, Dylan Roof too.
Right.
His just is a little, you know, it seems like more of a hatred thing with Dylan Roof. And so I saying Dahmer's off the hook. He should have gone to jail, all of that stuff. But I'm just saying, I don't know if I see him as like this super, super evil person.
You're right. Like I almost in a way, like a serial killer or something, I feel like there's something happening and they have to feed it. And like when you look at that, it feels more like, I'm just going to be a mean person.
Right.
I'm going to be a terrible person right now.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's not the same thing as, oh, I have to go kill people. It's, I'm just going to go do this thing. He made that decision. A serial killer, I think that's why a lot of people are fascinated with it. It's just this thing where it gets sadistic and crazy. It's not just killing people. It's power. It's a sickness, a disease, and all that crazy stuff. Now, the other thing I wanted to say, though, about all the people you read, what weirds me out about that is, that maybe that is them, and we literally are only functioning at a very low level of our brain. And when something traumatic, we call it trauma, it might, and you could almost say it's not trauma, it's enlightening. It exposes.
Well, most brain injuries don't have a savant-like effect.
No,
most of them, you just shut down
I know. It's a coincidence that it happened to hit the right neurons or whatever, parts of your brain, frontal lobe, whatever. But I'm just saying, like, now they might be functioning at a bigger level, which would appear to be a different person, like the last guy you said or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, it would appear to be a different person because he's functioning at an entirely more robust level, maybe. I mean, like, that maybe that's what that is. Maybe everybody has the ability to care about music and play the piano, but in this person, it just didn't develop. And now all of a sudden, a traumatic brain injury, oh, yeah, I can understand that now and care. But that's what really weirds me out, too, is we're even talking about people caring about something. Not just all of a sudden she has an accent, but now she actually, the guy cares about playing piano, or he actually has a desire. It's not just this thing happened. He actually has different desires.
He didn't make different decisions to get there is all I'm saying.
Yeah.
He just found himself to have different desires.
Meaning, but that happens with us. My desires have completely changed since I was 7 to 17 to 27 to 37.
You're just the guy that decides what to do with them.
I guess. I mean, that doesn't sound right, though.
Here's what
you don't like it.
I don't like
it. No, it
at
sounds
all.
Very logical and correct and very close to your experience. You just don't like it.
Well, Matt, what do you think about this statement? A pastor that Toby and I know, he says, and he's.
You think somebody's going to get off the hook for something?
He's
like, it's a sense of justice that's making you go, that can't be true. It has to be personal responsibility. But you know from your experience that you are simply the person riding this big elephant that simply gets to decide what to do with the impulses. That's the Toby part.
Why was Joey so fundamentalist then? Like he just these thoughts of whatever happened in his head, and he just decides to make sure he proselytizes people for God or not. You know what I mean?
But like, the impulses were already there. He decided maybe how to act on them at best. The best you could say is that. At worst, you could say, no, he wasn't even deciding. When you take a kid like him with his brain chemistry and do this to him and then tell him this, of course we know what he's going to do.
What do you feel about the following statement that a pastor has told me, and he's a counselor too. He says that everyone is doing the best they can with what they have, including the brain they were born with, the background that they were, the family and all that stuff, their experiences, the things that they missed out on, the things that they got that was harmful, things they got that was good, all of that stuff. Everyone is doing the best that they possibly can with what they've been given.
Well, that's really just a way of speaking about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
no, I agree.
I don't think that manner of speaking doesn't necessarily capture personal responsibility. I don't know if this really...
Now, he wouldn't be an advocate of people not having responsibility, but it does lead him to be a very good counselor because he's trying to figure out what caused you to be like this. And if we can figure that out and see how you can get your eyes off of that and gravitate towards something more healthy, then we can lick this thing.
Yeah.
Because...
Well, I mean, the notion makes sense there, that everybody is doing, they're making the, from their point of view, they are making the best decision that they know how to make.
Right.
That wouldn't, doesn't that feel like your experience of living? Like, at all, I mean, you know, where's the time where you've done things that you knew were wrong, and you've known that the decision that you made was one that was labeled as bad.
Right.
But you thought it was the best thing to do at the time.
Did I?
Yes. That's how you chose. So that
I don't know. I think you can choose something knowing this is not the best thing. But
no,
you
you can choose something knowing it is wrong to do.
Right.
But ultimately, you calculated that it would be your best move from here.
Well,
you did. You did it.
That doesn't
you chose
mean-
it. You selected it. What multiple choice test did you ever pick an answer other than the one that you thought was the best one?
I mean, it seems like common sense. I'm going to look at porn and this is the best decision. B, I'm going to look at porn and it's not the best decision.
To look
decision.
At porn. It's a sin to look at porn. From my current point of view, I must have calculated that was the best path forward and I chose it.
Or this is not the best path, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Well, what about this?
No, that's just bad language for it. You thought it was the best path.
Well, to further Matt's point, how about this? The only reason you know bad porn is bad because other people told you.
That's right.
And so
you didn't know.
So,
yeah, that's
so
right.
So it wasn't like you even got to choose that. Like if you'd have grown up in a family that did pornography
if
for
you
a
grew
living,
up in the woods like the Blue Lagoon and found a porn, you right? Like if you
that's
grew,
what I'm saying.
Like, you think, wouldn't have thought that. You would have just thought it was the best decision to make is look at this stimulating visual images.
We have no idea
what you were looking at.
We interviewed Costi Hinn, and he grew up in Benny Hinn's entourage, and he was like, "Oh, this is what you're supposed to do for the Lord." And then it took this other thing, another idea. Maybe you're winning me over. Somebody else presented something else similar to, Jesus presented something else. And everybody goes, oh, okay, well, now I see that. I'll choose that or something. Like the ideas, I guess what you're getting at here is ideas come up and who you are is what you choose.
What you do, what you do with it. Yeah. But so, the ideas,
but
I mean, the
but
impulses,
what does that have to do with
most
the
of,
soul?
Well,
you won't, are you, yeah, even,
do
you even have
do you
choices
believe we
in
have
heaven?
A soul?
Do you have choices in heaven then? Is your soul going to be making decisions?
Well, how, I mean,
or what are you?
If you're a pedophile after a brain injury, then you go to heaven. Do you have pedophile impulses? Was that in your, if not, who, I mean, I don't know. It gets squirrely.
People just say that's, everybody says, oh, that's the sin thing. Like, but, if you really boil,
but that doesn't, that's not an explanatory.
Sin weirds me out because it,
that's
it,
just
on a certain like, level,
that's just a get out of jail free
I know,
card.
And
on
a certain
issue.
Level, there's some liquid or atom or ion or thing, whatever that causes an impulse, right? The same way as me with the
neurological configuration,
whatever, something in your brain causes something to happen. And then we say it's spiritual that you did the bad thing, right? But it actually is very scientific, and you could trace it in all the stuff.
I would say that you've never made a decision that you thought was the wrong one.
Ah, that's not true.
No, but...
Thank you. I knew he was going to get my back.
That's not true.
You knew it was wrong to make that decision, but you still thought that would be the best possible scenario going forward for you.
No,
you chose it.
I believe 100% I felt helpless to stop it.
And you're willing to accept the consequences. I know I'm going to feel bad about doing something. There's no way.
I'm not saying you're not going to feel bad about it. You knew that you would feel bad about it and still fucking worth it.
Well, here's...
you did it.
Let me circle all the way back around and prove my point.
You knew what the circle... You knew what it was. You knew it was bad. You still did it. And you knew how you'd feel afterwards. Did you not?
Let me circle all the way back around. And to me, this proves where I'm at and what I believe. If tomorrow morning we wake up and we find out that Toby went home... last night,
say something about Hitler
and killed all of his family.
Oh, cool, yeah.
All right, so he killed his family. He's in jail. Not for a second do I think I never knew Toby. He is full of evil. I think something snapped.
That's right. Right.
Something bad happened.
You
I gotta go
think
see
he
my
made
friend.
A bad decision because that's not a decision he is capable.
No,
of
I would
making.
Say I gotta go see my friend. Something right. bad happened.
Right.
Something appears.
Okay.
Off.
So let's just move while in the time we have left. Okay. Suicide.
God, come on.
No, just stay with it. This suicide.
Well, I had a very humbling experience. I've shared this on here before, so I'll make it snapshot story. I used to always think I was on a moral high ground that I would never kill myself because I've never contemplated it. I've wanted to die before, but I realized one time through hearing social workers that I don't think I'm on a moral high ground. I think I've never gotten sick enough. I've gotten sick enough to want to die and to desire it, but I think if I would have gotten... a little bit sicker, then maybe I would have gotten to the point where I would have. And that is where I completely have empathy for people that kill themselves or that are suicidal, because I remember wanting to die, and I had three kids at the time, and I can't believe I wanted to die. I cannot believe it. I can't even relate to that. So when people take their lives, there is a mental illness there, and they truly believe it is the best thing and the only thing. So is that what
so
you're
it's
asking?
Not selfish to
no,
commit suicide?
No, was those thoughts in there? Was that Joey, or was that something that was out there that you were trying to resist?
What do you mean?
Like, was Joey the one causing those thoughts of wanting to die, or was it wanting to die?
It was my brain. I believe it was my brain.
So you created those thoughts.
No,
you're the owner of them.
He just noticed it. He just noticed that he wished he was dead.
But where did the thought come from to not want to be here?
It just. Neurological configuration.
But I mean that's where I don't like it, because every thought
you don't like it. I know
every possible thought can float through your head.
Doesn't it?
But where does that?
Doesn't it? Have you never had crazy thoughts all over your head and you go, "Oh my god!"
But just like you said in another science segment, humans create those thoughts and knowledge. So a human, your brain, whatever it is creating it. Something about your brain is the only way I can and rectify all what we're saying is your brain is constantly. Creating stuff, and you pick
without
and choose.
Your knowledge,
you pick and choose
without your decision making. You know for a fact, and all science will tell you system one and system two things. It's happening in the background.
Now
you don't tell yourself your heart to beat. You don't tell
right.
your
what
neurons
is that,
where
what
to
is
go.
That
you
called when your heart just beats and all this? What is that system?
Involuntary.
Yeah, involuntary stuff. Right? Maybe your brain works the same way.
Of course it
it's
does.
It's just constantly creating stuff.
Of course it does.
And you go up here's this.
There's
thing.
Plenty
I'll take
of science
this.
On that. Like if you see an object that looks like a snake. In the woods, you jump, and then you think, was that a... And then eventually,
right.
a few milliseconds later, you go, oh, that was a stick.
Right.
You saw the stick. Your amygdala and deep brain made a decision that you weren't in on.
Yeah, but
and made your heart rate jump, and you jumped, and then you processed what you thought it was and said, I'm Toby, I think that's a stick. Calm down, rest of brain.
But you still right. learned that, though. That did not originate
no,
from
it
the
happened,
brain.
No, it happened every time. I can scare you. I can jump out from a corner and scare you and tell you I'm going to do it.
But I learned over time that snakes are dangerous. If I was 2 years old, do you think I would jump out of something
point,
that looks
you're missing
like,
the point of that
so
experiment. What I'm saying is your body does things and reacts before Joey knows about it.
Oh, yeah,
in
sure.
your brain. Your brain makes tons of decisions about your body and your behavior and where your arms move and what your heart rate is without you having anything to do with it.
I guess that's what I'm arguing, though, is it seems like I had my upbringing and what people taught me about snakes is what made me jump.
Nope. Monkeys do it.
Huh?
Monkeys do it.
Monkeys jump at snakes without knowing snakes are dangerous? I'm saying I do believe it's involuntary, but that involuntary notion was established because I was taught that snakes are something to avoid.
No.
So it's instinct.
Yes. No, I'm just saying your brain, no. What I'm saying is your brain is doing actual decision-making and processing that your conscious, cognitive, prefrontal cortex, the part of you that thinks you're sitting behind your eyes, Joey. I'm Joey. I'm right here. I'm right behind my eyes. I'm looking at the world. I'm making decisions. I'm in charge. No, you're not. You're only in charge of something sometimes. The rest of it is just happening in your brain, and it's making the decisions, and it is not you.
What about getting the damn giggles? Same sort of thing? Something strikes you as funny and you're doing everything you can not to. Is that involuntary?
Yeah, go ahead and get the giggles right now. That's not real. You know it's not real. Can you stop? Yeah. When you really have the giggles, can you stop?
No.
No.
Involuntary.
Oh, God. Right.
So you can't make yourself have the giggles because you want to. You get them.
I could. I probably could start fake laughing. And
yeah, eventually those things cross over. If you it raise somebody's heart rate, guess what? They'll get anxious. If you physically stimulate somebody's That's heart, true. That person will become anxious.
Right. I was in a really serious conversation with a bunch of guys, and I noticed that one of them, their heads looked just like the PBS heads, and I just was about to die laughing. And I was like,
you didn't
please
decide
don't
that. You know, found that.
You noticed something, and then it calls for a response.
Okay, but like, so when you think about like suicide, though, when you think about Kate Spade and Anthony Bourdain, how do y'all, I want to know how y'all think about it.
I believe that they got to a place where they didn't think they had any other option.
I am becoming more
cynical and disgusted.
I want to say open. And I really don't believe anymore. Like a lot of people, I mean, I saw this with Anthony Bourdain a lot, especially a lot. I think when people say this, it's because they're scared or they aren't comfortable with themselves or whatever. Call them cowards and awful, you know.
Right? Selfish, whatever.
Yes, 100%. Same as the musicians, you know. That did stuff, killed themselves as well. I don't think of this as coward anymore. I really do think at this point, like Joey, I think you call this, like Joey, do you think of it as a sickness if you kill yourself? Like there's a sickness.
Yeah, and there's mental, it was a result of mental illness. Healthy people don't just say, and kill myself.
Okay. I wrote down some questions that seem to not suggest that. When is it rational to commit suicide? Let's say you're a prisoner of war, being tortured, and you have a cyanide capsule.
9/11 jumpers.
That's not mental illness.
All your flesh has been burned off, and you're like, I'm in agony.
I mean, this is easy. Sure. It's very
rational decisions.
About terminally ill, 85 years old, pancreatic cancer.
That's a big difference than convincing yourself when it's not.
Go the other way.
Life was over for those 9/11
jumpers. No, I know, but I have a root canal coming up. It's not going to be pleasant. I don't have a ton of family or anything. I'm just going to bail. I mean, I'm fine. I'm not mentally ill. I'm just not interested in the root canal. I've done what I need to do here.
I don't think you would do it unless you were sick.
What about the people? What's the difference?
I just don't think you would do that. But kill yourself because you're getting a root canal?
What about if you're not mentally ill and you just have the shame of a scorned lover and you feel like there's no way to go on without the girl? She broke your heart.
Okay.
That's not mental illness. Well, you just decided.
Let me back up then. I don't think every single suicide is strictly someone being convinced that's the only way out, but I do think that's the majority of them. Sure. Okay. I think you can kill yourself on a whim.
Tell me when suicide is not rational and attributed to mental illness. What about if you just have a truly devastating personal loss and you just don't feel like you've lost three or four of your family members, you have no mental illness.
I do believe that there are some situations.
That's not mental illness. And
I got home and saw that my whole family was dead,
you just didn't feel like
I would think of killing myself. I would think
I would too. Yeah.
So what do you just, you know what? I've been here 40 years. I've had a hard life. I've had a lot of trauma. Nothing ever's good happened to me. It doesn't seem like it's going to from here on out. I'm just done.
I don't think that happens often.
Why not?
I just don't think it does. I don't have any stats that support that. I just don't think it does.
I mean, what if you're a super powerful person like Bernie Madoff and your empire collapsed? You're going to spend the rest of your life in jail. Bill Cosby, whatever. I mean, but that.
Like, you wouldn't be surprised if Bill Cosby killed himself, and I don't think you would think it's mental illness. It's not mental illness.
So it is possible. It wouldn't, I mean.
Yeah, but I'm saying I think most suicides are a product of mental illness. But yes, you are right. I think there's exceptions to that.
Here's the thing that weirds me out about it, though, is if that pain is that bad, you're okay with it if you're in a building that's going to explode or collapse or whatever, and you jump out and
it's
kill yourself.
It's just a calculation.
But
at that point,
if the pain is that bad, whatever that pain is, I guess that's what you're calling the mental illness, pain. But maybe it's
one of the reasons where you could rationally. Right. I mean, could you not just say, I'm so mentally ill, there's no point?
But
could that not be rational?
But what I'm saying is, we're calling it a mental illness as if it could be fixed or whatever. But the same way as if you're on an island by yourself and all of a sudden your appendix burst, you just want to die. Just go ahead and kill me. Like, I'm not fixing this. I don't have doctors here. It can't be fixed right now. So the bigger thing here is, like, these people, what I'm trying to understand and maybe I'm realizing now is whatever they are calling pain and anguish and hurt and misery, is real. And so they just like, another day of this is not worth it. And maybe I believe that. Well, I'm not saying it's good. I don't want anybody to kill themselves. None of us want to or anything like that. But I'm saying this is a real time where I'm starting to go, this pain is so bad that to them, it might be better. Because, I mean, the other option is, no, it's mental illness and they should still be here tomorrow. But what we're saying is stay here tomorrow even though the pain is horrific. You wouldn't say that to, hey, no matter what, I know that the building's on fire, just stay through it if you can. You would say, no, go ahead and jump.
I would give mental illness this out.
If it's you, not cowardly, I don't think.
Yeah, and I'm not even trying to paint that. I'm saying maybe it's just a good calculation. Maybe it's just better to be dead. I'll go so far as to
that. If you're talking about like numbers, that's what I'm getting.
I mean, there's plenty of situations where it's just better to be dead.
Yeah.
And mental illness could be one of them. I would draw the line in the fact that if you talk to Bourdain or Kate Spade at multiple times and ask them what they thought, would they, you know, is it, if they had waited one more day, would they have a different decision?
Yeah, right.
You know, is it right. An actual symptom of the acute thing that takes you out when you're being irrational? You know, have you ever been so angry that you're irrational and made a bad decision?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then that wasn't your real decision.
No, but how about this, Matt? Just take those two for example. I bet they would say, yeah, there's lots of those days, and I made it through them all.
So I'm saying, so they make.
And so this was the one I didn't make it through.
I know. I'm just saying. The worst thought I have is, they might have just made the right decision.
I mean, that wasn't the first time Anthony Bourdain ever thought about committing suicide.
No, I'm sure you're right. You know what I mean? Who are you to say it's better to exist than not?
I don't know about that. We put supreme value on human existence. That it's the best thing.
I don't know.
Awesome. It's better than death. Like, don't you think, doesn't everybody think staying alive is better than death?
We're all very predisposed to being biased towards existence.
Right. You've never been dead.
We like it.
So I've never been dead in my life. So I 100% think being alive is way better.
To you, it feels like, I thought you were a Clemson fan. Now you're a Gamecock fan? You think being dead is better than being alive? No, we're the alive team.
Right.
What are you doing?
Yes.
That's our team. We live.
And that's why everybody's like, so, oh my God.
We're the ones that are supposed to live. Well, you don't want to live. You don't want to be a Clemson Tiger anymore? You're a defector?
The other thing that weirds me out, everybody's totally not okay, but like, think about this. You're fine if Anthony Bourdain dies from cancer. It killed him. But if he chose to do it, can't go there.
Not the same response, right?
You know what I mean? Like, isn't that weird? Like, any other thing that kills you, you might be shocked by it or whatever, but you can understand it. If somebody goes, I don't want to be here, we cannot reconcile it in our brains. It does not make sense if you get to choose your own death.
I got a few more questions that I don't have answers to.
I want
to
be pastor real quick before maybe.
Father God.
If anything, this leads me to have way more grace and patience for other people, and it makes me marvel at the potential of God's grace for all humanity, given this context. I mean, we are supremely messed up. Like, I really think God's going to be pretty gracious.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I'm hopeful that there's...
Well, you had to add hope.
It was getting dark. I'm just trying to look...
Joey's like, this suicide stuff. Father God, you are good.
You ever heard of grace? Okay. Well, how about this? A few more questions.
Before you do those questions, do you think some people heard what you just said and find it offensive? Like, you're telling me my life's so bad and you're telling me that God is gracious? You know what I mean? Like, that's what's rough for a lot of people.
No, I was talking about post-death.
Yeah.
That's what I was talking about.
Why ain't God gracious in life, though?
I know. I think differently. Like, if universalism is true, problem solved.
So do you think Anthony Bourdain made the wrong decision?
Did you think he
made a decision, and if so, the wrong one?
My guess would be that he made the only decision that he felt was there.
So no decision. That's not a decision.
Right. It was a 9/11 jumper.
That goes all the way back to what we've been talking about the whole time. No decision?
He was a 9/11 jumper. That would be my guess.
Which is not really a decision.
I think he had an option, live or die, and he goes, yeah, here we go. I've always tried living.
Can you respect his
For
decision?
For 60 then? Years, I've tried living.
Can you
Why don't I try
do you
this
respect
death
his decision?
I mean... Man, this is so hard. I mean,
I'm just trying to make it hard.
I mean, everybody's
going to have an answer.
This is a very uncomfortable conversation and very awkward.
I just wrote these questions
down
because I had them.
Can I respect a person that gets to choose?
Can you respect their decision? Or did he make the wrong one?
He'd be pissed if a close friend killed himself. I know. I mean, you would eventually get to a place where
if Joey would have killed himself, I would be angry. I really would be. And part of that would be because I would go, "The fuck, Joey? You hurt your family." Like,
of course,
if you hurt your family right now, like if you did it in real,
but the counter argument to that is so strong. Like, if there's any way to avoid that pain for his family, he would have avoided it. That's the opposite of self. It's like, of course he wouldn't do that to his family. Therefore, it must not have been his decision. It's the illness, you know what I mean? Then you can say, well, it's the illness. That's why it's the illness.
Right.
How about this? Is it good to memorialize it? I don't know the answer to that one.
Yeah,
either.
That's honor. What do you mean by that? To honoring the person post-suicide?
Well, you know, the way people like to make a big deal out of it.
I mean, sure. As soon as somebody commits suicide,
I'm not sure that's true.
As soon as he committed to suicide, everybody's posting this.
Is that good that people do that?
Maybe. I don't know if it's that bad.
My next question is, anytime you celebrate humanity, I think it's a good
thing. They're celebrating the work and the influence they had.
I don't know. I don't know about that. Next question will color that a little bit, and it's just a question.
Okay.
Do celebrity suicides cause more suicides? As in, is it contagious?
Yeah, yes. I think so.
Okay. Yep. Is memorializing it not a part of that? Like, look at all, like, you've just demonstrated to the whole world how, you know what I mean? You've just said all, it's like, it's very easy when you see the memorialization of Bourdain to think, I wish I had that. And my life's actually really shitty.
Yeah, but
can you not imagine your own funeral and how the people saying good stuff? You
know? So your only other option,
I think it might be contagious.
Your only other option is to be like, screw that guy. I can't believe how selfish he was. Moving on to other news.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying our behavior in wake of it maybe causes more suicides.
Maybe.
This is what I think.
But I don't think,
it might. I don't know. And then last question I have is, does Christianity and notions of the afterlife increase suicide?
No, I think it's a deterrent, right?
Well, you're just going to go to heaven.
No, I don't know. A lot of Christians
Maybe it's turning into that. Yeah. Like, I would say for the first time in my life, in the last maybe 4 or 5 years, no, maybe longer than that, the majority of my life,
suicide makes you go to hell.
The majority of my life, I live thinking if I kill myself, I'm going to hell.
Okay,
I don't think that anymore.
But then once you think you go to heaven, doesn't it make it a little bit easier?
Huh?
Once you are of the type of Christian that believes as soon as I'm dead, I'll be with the Lord, does that not increase your ability?
Sure, I agree with Toby. I don't think that's the prevailing notion amongst Christians at this point. Maybe you don't think
when you're sitting there in your truck with your gun and thinking about, here we go, I'm going to be in heaven soon. It doesn't make it a little easier?
No, I think it makes it easier. I don't think that most Christians think it contributes to suicide. I'm just saying I think most Christians think really
that's not an unpardonable sin. That sounds like,
I don't know. I think the opposite. I was always taught if you commit suicide, you go to hell. I mean, I was actually taught
I don't believe that people really think that much anymore. I think people say that same ways they talk about premarital sex.
I think it's wrong.
Just to scare you. But anyway, I don't know.
I mean, this is all awful.
It's pretty confusing. Like, you have to admit you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. I'm not purporting any answers. But if you look at the soul question to our brains, to our decisions, or our conscience.
Joey. All of a sudden, I walk into the kitchen and something happens, and the stove explodes, and my entire skin's on fire. You put me out, stop, drop, and roll. But I'm just screaming and I'm in agony, and I say, Joey, I'm begging you, please, just kill me. Just kill me. We're in war. You know, go back to the World War I or World War II or whatever. And somebody's leg gets blown off. And they're just like, please, I don't know. I don't care. You have to kill me because I can't take the pain. The agony is all this stuff. And you kill them. Like, they ask you to do something and you end their life for them because they're asking you. So, you know, basically a suicide in a way, but you had
assisted
a part in
suicide.
It. And the reason you did it is because you thought, I am relieving this person of agony. That's what I'm saying. Anthony Bourdain, Kate Spade, all these people, I am relieving me of the agony. It is agony.
Right.
Being here tomorrow.
Rational, good decision.
If tomorrow is anything like today, it has to be over.
So couldn't you say it's a very good rational decision that he made that you support and respect?
Now, how about
that? You support and respect.
How is that not? I'm just asking. I don't know.
Now, think about this. How many people have committed suicide in the history of the world?
I don't know. A lot.
Unreal, right?
Google it. I bet you there's an estimate.
You couldn't even number it, maybe.
I'm also pretty sure it's on the rise.
Oh, yeah. Right. Now, how about this?
But agony is at an all-time low as far as we define it, but I don't know about that.
So these people kill themselves because there's agony, and it's the worst, and it's not worth being alive anymore. Christianity says that if you don't do a couple of things, that the worst agony ever will happen forever. So our God, like, no matter what, already you see people, this life is bad enough for some people. Yeah. Imagine, now we're going to tell people, you better believe in our God, or else you'll have even a worse agony that will never end. And that's our God.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, we've turned I tell you what, we better not title this episode anything about suicide. I know that from both experience
labeled.
And
people
everything
don't like,
else.
People do not like this talking about another, it.
That's what I'm saying.
There's a lot of people that are uncomfortable and think we're being jerks talking about it.
I know. According, this episode will probably do poorly, and some people will have turned it off. We did, and I don't know if people know this or not, but we did a labeled episode when Chris Cornell and somebody else had killed himself, and there's a ton of musicians that we know that have suffered badly with depression and suicide and suicidal attempts and ideations. So I said, why don't we try to talk to some of them about that on
the
podcast?
Get a conversation going.
Well, of course, all the people that I'm thinking of right now immediately declined to participate, except Rob from May came on and did it. Now, the most interesting part of that experiment to me was that was the least downloaded episode in
people
all of
didn't
Label.
Like it. They're people didn't want to listen about people killing
themselves. They don't want to talk about it. They don't want to hear about it. They don't want to think about it. And all the questions I just asked, it's not pleasant.
I know.
But I'm not hearing any answers.
Try to have a conversation with somebody about suicide. They go, it's just so sad. And they won't talk about it.
Not even getting close.
How many people kill themselves daily?
Okay. I'm
in the world?
Slow down. I'm going to try to get, I have no idea, but let me think about
it. Hold
that.
On. How many people kill themselves in the world or America?
Every day. All right. The world population is 7 billion.
7 billion.
Yeah.
I said 7 million.
7 million people in, you know, a big city. Okay. Think of your answer and then we'll say it out loud. I'm going to say
daily.
Every day. I'm going to say.
I'm getting a number.
Out of 7 billion.
I really want to try to get this close, but I don't think I don't
God,
know.
I don't know what to guess. Right range. Okay, I'll go first. I'm going to say something stupid. This can't be right. I'm going to say 10,000.
No, that's a really good guess. I was thinking, am I going to cross 10? But I think it's under 10. But high digit, single thousands is
okay,
right.
Okay, how many?
So I'll
Joey?
Just say 8,000.
3,000 a day.
Okay. Wow.
That's 1 million people each year. That's one death every 40 seconds.
I thought.
And then for each individual who takes their own life, at least 20 attempt to do so. So multiply.
Oh, yeah. Attempts. Yeah. I mean, there's probably 10,000 attempts.
I mean
so that's
60,000.
If you just want to clarify your guess, it was really good. It was maybe 10. What?
60,000 attempts a day.
Well, all the attempts aren't really real. We know that too. But somewhere in between 3,000 and 30,000. And it's just, you know, something like that. So there's like 12,000 to 20,000 actual people every day that go, I'm out. And then some of them live anyway.
Now, if you look at that, if you take God and spiritual, all that stuff out of it, and just look at numbers, think about 7 billion people. Of course, you would look at any organism with that many cells, or you go, well, that many people.
It's not that many statistically, but.
That's what I'm saying.
It's still
like,
weird.
It's actually probably not that I would have assumed it had been, maybe should be more.
Let's just try to get it. 1 million a year? What percentage is 1 million of 7 billion?
1 million of 7 billion?
Yeah, I don't know how to do that.
I could never do that math.
No, you can do it.
I can't do that math. 10 million. What do you got? Do you take cross out the zero, add the two?
It's like a thousandth.
it's 0.1% then. If you're right about that, it's not 0.1 because it's good. Shit. We talked ourselves into
this. This is awful.
We sound so stupid. But it's not 1%. It's some fraction of a percent. I mean, it's a significant amount. 1 million people a year out of 1 billion. That's some point. It's point something percent.
Yeah, it's 1,000.
It's significant. Well, then, 1,000 out of 7 billion, though.
So wouldn't it be 0.00?
A million out of 1 billion is 1,000th. Huh? Right? 1 million out of 1 billion is 1,000th. Yeah. And then 7 billion, though. So it's less than 0.1%. So it's 0.01 something. 0.007 or so, 0.00 man, oh something man. Percent. But that's a, I mean, that's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot. Well, I was on the plane. I was deeply, thinking about stuff. I had a 3.5 hour plane ride, and that's the kind of stuff I wanted to talk about. So sorry if it took you down a level.
That's okay.
And I don't imagine anybody else is listening.
You love getting like that because it's like you get to that extreme stuff gets you. You get to finally feel emotion.
I love it.
Right? Like you don't know, a little stuff doesn't let you know, but that is
emotion.
I'm trying
to knock other people off their confidence blocks that they know what the fuck is going on. I mean, you don't. That's all.
No, you're
that's
right
my
about
only
that.
Point. Is we're not about to have it figured out. I like spending time in that zone. Yes, I do.
Hell yeah.
But only for that reason. But I like cutting up. Clowning around.
You like having a good time. That's what I've always said.
I like both.
Yeah.
I like
we need to remember that. That is a huge part of what Bad Christian is about, is making sure people know
that you don't know what the fuck you're doing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or
that's
think.
Exactly. Yeah. You don't even know if you think.
Yeah.
So, but I know when I'm cutting up or being silly or hanging out with the BC Club, I like it. And so we're going to do a new thing here. We're going to start taking questions when we can from the BC Club to let them have
those
a voice.
Brilliant folks.
It's just too good. It's too dumb of an idea to not have them on. We can't technologically manage calling in and call in screening and those types of things yet at this
not
time.
Not yet.
But maybe if the club grows a little bit more, we could. But we did take some questions from clubbers. I'm going to play you for them now and have not heard the questions. Y'all haven't either. So we'll just keep them nice and tight and see if they're fun or serious. I don't know what's coming up. But here we go.
Hell yeah.
All right. Thank you, BC Club. What do we got?
Hey, this is Michael from Georgia. I have a question for Toby.
Hey, thanks.
So, Toby, if you could live in any time period in history, do you think you'd still be as angry as you are?
Oh, God. Fuck Michael and his fucking question. This piece of shit thinks he's going to come on my podcast and talk to me that way?
Obviously, if you
don't have anger problems.
Well, obviously, what's wrong with him? In medieval times, you couldn't have had bullshit voice memos sent into you like that to piss you off.
I know. Let me guess. Michael from Georgia, racist. What this fuck? Who the fuck is this guy? He's a terrible human.
You would have been the least angry in the time where the least amount of people could have contacted you. So if you were like a sheep herder in the year 400, you'd have had less people to anger you?
Yeah, maybe. You might be right.
He'd be pissing the sheep.
I think that my anger comforts people. They're like, you know what I mean? Like,
I think so, too.
You know what I mean? Like, they're like, oh, well, he's angry. Okay. I get a little angry, but
that
guy.
I'm not that bad.
Yeah. I'm nothing like that. That makes it, they just feel, I'm going to handle all the anger for them. You know what I mean? There's no worry when you're around me that the anger needs to be taken care of. I got to think about the anger.
Yeah, he'll
I gotta
handle that.
Fix it. Yeah, Toby.
So if you get super super famous, there's going to be couples in their marriage that they start getting angry and then be like, hey, let's stop. Toby's got this.
I thought, so two jobs I've thought about for myself. One we were talking about the other day. One, I think I should get a job at an office place where I just cut up and I make everybody happy, right? Also,
water cooler guy.
Yeah, I'm just at the water cooler. I'm doing little pranks at your little cubicle, all this. Like, you're happy when I'm around, I'm cutting up, making jokes.
You pick the music that plays in the bathroom, in the office.
I know little
things
about your personality and I make fun of you. Oh, this guy's fucking cool, right? Yeah. I'm an energy guy there. That should be a job of mine. The other one I was thinking is, how you get mad at your job and stuff? I get to handle all your anger for you. You come, you say, hey, man, this happened today with Steve. Mm-hmm. This, and this. And I go over to Steve and I just fucking end that dude.
You do what?
I yell at Steve. I yell. I handle all the anger. Like,
no, I think you've got that
wrong.
You get
to see me do it.
Let's try this one. You absorb people's anger and take it, but it's fake, of course. You just pretend, you get angry for them and they're like, well, I'm not that mad about it. Like Steve tells you.
Oh, right. Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
You diffuse. Steve's mad at the boss and you say, what's going on, Steve?
Yeah.
And
he asked me to stay.
Well, the boss asked me to stay. What the fuck?
This is the third fucking time this week, this month. God! And he's like, no, it's actually not that bad. It ain't really that bad. I mean, I love my job. Okay, man. See you, Toby.
I should have never talked to him about that.
Good Lord. I didn't.
Last time I'm ever going to go to him.
This job's pretty awesome. And then I just go in and give the boss gives me a high five, and we're in good shape. That's a great idea.
Diffuser. Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing.
Hype man, water cooler man, diffuser. Yeah. You can use that at these progressive companies.
I know. So, yeah. So, to answer your question, I'm good at anger.
Okay, we have another one. Here we go.
Hey, this is Michael from Georgia. I have a question for all three of you.
Oh, come on, Michael.
How long do you think it'll be before we get a hotel on the moon?
Okay, was this with two? What's okay, Reva? What's the deal with two from Michael here?
He's a computer hacker.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, the first time we bust out a segment is two from Michael.
Well, Michael is the only person that sent us any questions at all.
Damn it!
Oh, God,
there's more than one person in the BC Club. No?
Yeah.
We've been reading out a billion names for 4 years.
No, hold on. Let's just go ahead and be honest. Every time we've talked about the BC Club, it's just Michael. Michael. He's our buddy. We like this guy.
The other three or four of you in the BC Club might want to send some in, and we'll take whatever your questions are. I wouldn't mind a more serious question, but we'll listen. What was this one again? I wasn't even listening.
How long is it going to be until
this is Michael
there's a
from
hotel?
Georgia.
On the moon?
I have a question for all three of you.
It's for all three.
How long do you think it'll be before we get a hotel on the moon?
Okay, so you have to define hotel is the first thing I would say.
Let Joey start the answer.
I would say define hotel would be pretty much a large facilities where many people can stay at overnight.
I'm thinking like
out of leisure.
I'm thinking like a resort. There's a resort
open
where you stay for a few days
and
you have fun. There's a
not
pool,
like
a nice pool.
Space station where
yeah,
people
I'm
can
gonna
come
say,
and go.
Yes.
It's like
a fun place to go.
Yep, I'm gonna say 60 years.
60 years from now,
we'll be able to do that.
Hmm.
I will say because you got to get the space travel down first. You know what I mean? Like it has to be safe where people feel confident enough to go, but one thing that makes me think it'll speed up is soon as there is actual tourist space travel, people will do it immediately.
There will be immediately. Space tourism will be super big.
Now, I think space tourism in 20 years.
I don't know about it.
I'm going to say a place that you can sleep. I think there will be a paid place
that you could spend the night on the moon.
I'm going to say 25
not
to 30
a hotel
years.
That you
years.
Randomly check in as if there were commerce happening on the moon. But
right.
A place where if you pay enough money, you can travel to the moon and spend the night and come home.
Yes. Like the same way as you can take a cruise to Antarctica.
Right. There's not a
hotel
there.
Yeah, it's not like, but yes. That's going to happen in 25 years. At least
between 20 and 60, I agree with that. There will be have people doing over civilians spending the night on the moon in the next 60 years. Yeah, I agree with that. It'd be in that range.
I mean, everything now, the one thing I think about technology now is it's just getting faster and faster how quickly like doubles or
certain things, you know not I mean? Everything. And certain times there'll be new breakthroughs and different types of technology you can't anticipate, also.
Now, I don't understand the physics of the possibility, like, for there to be life in other places in the universe, for them to be able to travel safely or for us to be able to travel safely to them, it's not possible without like wormholes and stuff, right? Because the speed that you would have to go to be able to do it in a lifetime and the debris that's floating around in space, it just seems almost impossible for you to arrive somewhere safely going that fast to where if you're going, I mean, you would have to go so fast to where if you hit a speck in space, you would blow up just because of the pure physics. Like, it just seems like you'd have to find another route,
that,
like a wormhole.
Well, what you're saying now is not, doesn't.
Science question.
I want to hear this.
It's a bigger topic. I mean, there's a way. It's just a lot more complicated than that. Like, I mean, you know, if there is intergalactic space travel, it's probably more like recomposing information or virtual or drone-like non-human. It could go a million years in one direction, and then when it gets there, reconstitute itself and whatever. You know what I mean?
The main thing about space travel...
And, of course, the space dust crashing the spaceship, for sure they'll be able to figure that one out.
That'll be wild.
You know, that won't be the barrier for intergalactic travel.
The main thing about space travel is we're thinking of it as like fossil fuels and
getting
there. It won't be that.
It may be an information beam that reconstitutes itself as a computer program and then communicates, and it's a virtual mind. I mean, there could be things. You know.
How long can I exist without a spacesuit if I was standing on the moon right now?
Just a few seconds.
What's the reason it would kill me?
Well, there's no air pressure there. So if you're way out in outer space, is something similar to your blood boiling.
Really?
Inside of your
body. Why does it boil?
What are we doing? I'm trying to wrap this up.
It's not hot, though. I don't understand blood boiling.
No, but
I thought you freeze in space. I didn't think
you
boil.
Yeah, it's cold.
But why would you boil? You say
because boiling has to do with air pressure, STP, standard pressure and temperature.
Stone Temple Pilots.
At standard temperature and pressure, the boiling point is 212.
Michael, when, you screwed
when
us.
There's no pressure, the boiling point goes way down.
You
to
screwed
less
us.
Less than your body temperature, and then your blood boils.
You asked us questions that now our episode's gotten longer. All this stuff. Michael,
we got it here.
It's disgusting.
Somebody asked a better question.
We're not done yet. We're not. Michael screwed us royally with his damn questions, and now I'm pissed. Because we still have the other people besides Michael who didn't send any questions.
You know water boils at a mile high different temperature, right? Because there's less air pressure.
I have moved on, Matt. These people did not send in questions from the BC Club. Brandon Newberger, fuck you. Jason McGregor,
can't include
eat
questions.
Shit. Corey Hernandez, asshole, and Michael. Thank you for sending your question, man. We actually really do appreciate it. We wouldn't have been able to do this whole segment
without you, my friend.
Thank you, my friend. All right, that's the BC Club. If you're not in it, please be in it. That way you can write us a question at the very least. If you didn't like Michael's two questions, which, you know, they're a little iffy on there, join the BC Club because the interaction, the experience, the friendships that you make, 100% worth it, and it helps this podcast grow and be good. So we really appreciate it. We will see you next time.
Yep.